Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
The Sports Today. It is Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz. And George, I'll give you somewhat of a breaking news. I know that I teased the subject that we were going to get to. We'll get to it. There's so much baseball. It's like we need a whole nother hour. But about a half hour ago, or around an hour ago, we had a statement released by Earl Thomas saying that he is going to be skipping out on minicamp and all team activities until his contract situation is resolved. And I'll read you the statement. I'll get your reaction afterwards. He said, "I will not be attending the upcoming minicamp or any team activities until my contract situation is resolved. I want everyone, especially the 12s, to know that I want to remain a Seahawk for the rest of my career, but I also believe that based on my production over the last 8 years, that I've earned the right to have this taken care of as soon as possible. I want to have certainty in regards to the upcoming years of my career. I'm going to continue to work my craft and put in work so that I can add to the team and give us the best chance to win. I hope my teammates understand where I'm coming from. I believe this is the right thing to do." Signed, E.T. So Earl Thomas is going to be holding out until he gets this new contract situation. The Seahawks have had this situation before with Cam Chancellor. This is a team that has, I still feel, pretty much ever since they decided to not run the football with Marshawn Lynch, a level of controversy, maybe unmatched in the NFL, just between rifts between player on player, player and coach, player management. So just reaction or E.T. holding out.
Not a shock. I saw a statement as well, but not a surprise at all. I think it's just a matter of time until he's traded. You know, he could say all he wants about that he wants to remain a Seahawk, and that might be true. But I think if they were going to work it out, it would have been worked out by now. I know they had extensive talks with the Cowboys during the draft. They couldn't work out an agreement. Well, the leverage just turned back to Dallas if Dallas still wants him. You know, because now I think Seattle sort of has no choice here. You've gotten rid of several other players anyway. You're not the Legion of Boom anymore. So I think it's just a matter of time until he moves on, whether it's Dallas or another team. I think the trade will be worked out eventually. They obviously don't want to pay him the money that he wants to be paid. So, and I don't think I blame Seattle for this either. You know, as a Cowboy fan, I'm not so sure it's a great idea to get him and then pay him the money he wants. You know, you got other contracts you have to worry about here as far as DeMarcus Lawrence next year. You know, and you got to pay him. You got the Zach Martin, the offensive lineman. You got to pay him. You know, and Lord knows, you better find a wide receiver somewhere.
I will say this much. Seattle is in a, I feel like they are just in this ever-evolving, difficult position. To me, the jump out of this statement, and not that it was surprising, it's that it's calculated, is how he said he wants to be a Seahawk for the rest of his career. It puts the onus on management, where pretty much any Seattle Seahawks fan knows how talented, knows how important he is to the team, and he's telling them that he wants to be there. So when he is, when he ends up not being there, all of the blame then ends up going on Seattle. So they are in this tough spot where, you know, the thing too is, how do they even afford to pay Earl Thomas when they still have, you know, a wide receiving core that is lacking? They have the offensive line that is still still a problem. Like, do you really want to pay a coming up on 30-year-old free safety? He's fantastic. Few players in the secondary that are better than Earl Thomas. There's no debating that. But yeah, I think you're right. He probably is traded, but I think that it furthers this rift that is going on. I'm sure you saw the quotes. Who was the player, the defensive end? Was it Frank Clark that had said it? That pretty much ever since the Super Bowl that they lost, their players just started to have way less.
I think it was Cliff Averill.
Cliff Averill, right. Thank you. Cliff Averill, who said it, that they just had a lot less trust in Pete Carroll. And then it was Bruce Irvin, who's over in Oakland now, kind of retweeted it and said this is absolutely correct. The whole Seahawks situation, it feels as if It is continuing to fall apart, and the only reason why people aren't talking about the Seahawks as one of the worst teams in football is something that you actually alluded to last segment. It's that Russell Wilson's an MVP caliber guy.
I agree. I think Carroll did get cute during that Super Bowl. You know, really outthought himself as far as throwing the pass there. Or, you know, some people actually believe it's because he didn't want Marshawn Lynch to score the game-winning touchdown. I don't know if I buy that. I just think he tried to outthink himself. You know, where New England was going to play the run, so we'll throw the ball. Even though he had multiple downs to do this, and New England wasn't able to stop Marshawn Lynch all day, so it was a bad call. I think the team may have lost some faith in him. Yes. You know, to say that's the reason why, I don't know about that, of a one-play call. I mean, you think a coach should a coach lose faith in you after you make one bad play? It was a bad call. It happens. But as far as Earl Thomas is concerned, I mean, Michael Bennett's now in Philly. Richard Sherman's in San Francisco. You had a couple of guys retiring now, because Avery we already mentioned. And Cam Chancellor probably will have to for injuries. You're not the same team anymore. Earl Thomas is making $10 million this year. You mentioned he's 29 years old. You know, just turned 29. What kind of contract does he want? $15 million a year for 4 years? I mean, you're not going to do that with, $25 million guaranteed. You're not going to do it if you're Seattle at all. So I think he almost has to be moved for this reason. You know, he's not showing up. Of course he's going to say he wants to remain a Seahawk for life because he doesn't want to upset the fans. And if he does come back, hear it from him. You know, so like you said, it's a PR move, and now you can blame the team if he doesn't come back, because they wouldn't pay him what he deserves and all this other stuff. So I do think that Earl Thomas will be moved. Now it's the matter of really who, and they're not going to get the compensation they want, because the leverage all does go now to the, now that Earl Thomas hadn't shown up, the leverage has gone now to an acquiring team rather than to Seattle, and they're going to have to want to eat it, because they may have to trade Earl Thomas for a fourth or fifth round pick. And I think that's the upside of what you can get. They may have to trade him for a sixth round pick with incentives that can move it up. You know, that wouldn't shock me either. Because generally, like I said, you don't see players traded all that often. It's tough to do. Earl Thomas still has something left. He can still play. He can still help a team. So it's going to be tough for Seattle to eat that. But if the player doesn't want to be there, he's not going to show up. It's causing a distraction. You've already moved on anyway. It's not like he's the last piece of a championship puzzle. You're not a good team anymore. You're not. Sorry, Scott. They're not. You know, you're playing a tough division now. Sorry, Mr. Engel. You got the Rams, right? They're going to be very good. You got an up-and-coming 49ers team. And then you're right there with the Cardinals. I'd say you're better than the Cardinals, but, you're around an 8-8 team. You're going to struggle. You might as well save the salary cap room for players that want to be there, move on from the distraction, get what you can get.
Yeah, so there you have it. Earl Thomas is going to be holding out, and it is likely on the move. I now want to shift over here to a subject that can kind of it'll transition us into baseball. I promise in this hour, we're going to get to George's closer report, some of the injuries that are in baseball right now. But there's a story out there that is certainly at top of the headlines a bit here, that is overlapping between football and baseball, which is not a sports that usually will overlap. And it's Kyler Murray, who was the number 9 overall pick in this year's MLB draft by the Oakland A's. And typically the MLB draft is not something that garners a lot of attention, because when these guys are drafted, we see them for a year, 2 years, sometimes 3 or 4. That's just the nature of baseball. The reason why Kyler Murray is a big story is we're going to see him next year at Oklahoma as the starting quarterback for the Sooners. So for those that don't know, Kyler Murray is one of the most decorated high school athletes we have ever seen. No hyperbole there. He is the only player who was ever selected for both the Under Armour All-American baseball game and the Under Armour All-American football game. He was Mr. Texas football twice. He was USA Today All-American twice, and the Gatorade Football Player of the Year in 2014. He was pretty much consensus ranked throughout all of the high school ranks, the number one dual threat quarterback in his class, while also looking like a future superstar in baseball. The reason why this situation is so interesting and so captivating is he has opted to go and play for Oklahoma next year, and potentially maybe he's putting himself at some risk. Like, one of the things that was a storyline heading into the MLB draft is where would he go? Because everybody said he was a top 5 pick, top 10 at worst, as long as this football situation wasn't looming. This football situation is not just looming. He's playing next year for Oklahoma and still went 9th overall. And the A's are cool with it. They said they're excited to be Oklahoma fans. But there is an interesting dynamic here of the safety of football, the risk, the injury risk that comes with football, and the security that can come with baseball. There's also an overlapping conversation about him being allowed to make money pretty much from the A's next year, about $5 million, while still playing in the NCAA, because we know how icky those rules can be. So, George, just the initial reaction to his decision to still want to play football next year, maybe taking that risk, the A's being willing to take that risk on taking a guy top 10 in an MLB draft who next year is going to be playing college football.
It's close, because I can see it both ways. My first thought is this. If you have a choice, if you're equally likely to make baseball and football, you choose baseball.
Yes.
All right, well, why would you want to get your body beat up? You know, and take a chance on a major injury, which can happen at any time here. That being said, you mentioned you already got paid by Oakland, right? You're going to make that money from signing, so why not give both sports a shot? Then you're covering your bases here in case football ends up being the sport you're better at. You know, so I don't mind that either. As to the NCAA, I think that's another shady organization where the players can't get paid. Oh, but you guys make money hand over fist, but God forbid the players who are killing themselves for you get paid. That to me is a complete freaking joke. The A's may have sent out that they're happy what he's doing. Yeah, what would Andrew Brandt say? That means they're pissed. Because they certainly didn't want their ninth overall pick playing football. I mean, come on. Of course they don't. They would have much rather have him be playing baseball full-time, and he'll get up to the organization quicker if he's indeed ready to play baseball. They don't want him taking a chance on playing football. But what are they going to tweet? Oh, we hate the fact that he's going to play football. You know, they're not going to tweet that. They're not going to upset him. So you see it from all sides here. Like I said, me personally, assuming I thought I had just an equal chance to play football and baseball, I'm going baseball. I don't even think it's close. Why would I want to get hit by all these linebackers, defensive linemen who are trying to rip my head off? You know, even if I'm good, I'm still going to get hit over and over again. Why do I want to put my body through it? You know, I don't. That's the bottom line, is I don't. I'm playing baseball. It's not even a close second to me. I love the game of football, but why would I want to go through those injuries? Why would I want to put my body through that pain? I don't. Playing baseball. But he may feel that he has a better chance as a pro to play football. He may also feel, hey, already got paid in baseball. I'm not saying I'm not going to play baseball, but already got paid. I'm set anyway. I got money. Now I can get football. Maybe he loves football more. You know, be a quarterback. You know, all this other stuff. Maybe that's what he wants to do. All the girls and the hype that comes with it. I get it. You know, so I don't truly blame the guy at all. But I think, like I said, if I was his advisor, his age, I don't think he's – is he even allowed to have an agent now because of the NCAA rules?
No, so
– if I was his advisors or his parents, I'm pushing him to baseball.
Here's the other part about this. One of the things I should have mentioned as well is nobody thinks that he has a chance to ever be drafted in the NFL. He's one of those perfect college quarterbacks where he's a supreme athlete, can do a lot with his legs, he can do enough with the arm to make it possible. Maybe he's in the Heisman running last year. He was originally at Texas A&M, and his first ever start there, he threw for 223 yards and rushed for 150 yards, and he ended up joining Cam Newton as the only SEC quarterback to gain over 100 yards through the air and on the ground with a passing touchdown and a rushing touchdown in their first career start, and he ended up transferring over to Oklahoma. I don't even think Kyler Murray ever has the desire to enter the NFL draft. It's almost as if he is, in a way, risking the baseball career that he could have. And listen, again, for him to go 9th overall, while a team is fully aware that he is going to play, not just hold down, he is going to be playing football, lets you know how talented of a baseball prospect he is. He's going to put that at risk just to, I guess, fulfill the dream of being a starting college quarterback for a full year. And I find that admirable. I think that is great because, you know, if you have that opportunity, right, like why not go for it? After this year at Oklahoma, odds are, he goes to the minor league system, makes it up, you know, to the MLB, perhaps in a year or two, and that's kind of his life. And, you know, there's no turning back from that. Like, once it's baseball, it's baseball. But there is risk there because it is football. Like, that's, we're not talking about basketball. We're not talking about lacrosse. Like, we're talking about a game that it is not kind to a lot of the guys who decide to make this their profession. And sometimes you don't even have to decide to make it your long-term profession. I mean, we just talked about a guy, someone like Jake Butt, who tore his ACL right before the NFL draft, and it cost him big dollars. And he wants to be a football player. Like, this isn't even where Kyler Murray's career path is taking him, and he's still going to put it at risk. Ultimately, it's his decision, but it is one that is, I think it's open to discussion because it's such an interesting choice, and maybe it's a bit scary to see someone put this at risk like that.
It's, like I said, I wouldn't do it, but then we're older, we understand things, we understand the pitfalls, but isn't this why he should have an advisor? You know, and is this also a reason why colleges don't want them to have agents? Because an agent would advise you, you can't do this, and the college then would lose the player. Is this the big thing with college baseball coaches? They have these guys throwing 160 pitches, and then 2 days later pitch again because they don't care. They don't care about their long-term future. They care about now, and they don't have anybody to tell them, hey, you can't do this. You can't pitch this guy again. I'll take him out of school. Where are the parents here? That's where I'm going to. Where are the parents? But I think this is also on the college because they want the player. They don't care about the long-term future of these kids. They don't. You're kidding yourself if you think they do.
It's fascinating stuff. When we come back, we're going to head over to the Closer Report. Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz here on Fantasy Sports Today.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Here on Fantasy Sports Today, Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz taking you up until noon. Following us, it's going to be Fantasy Football Frenzy. That's right, more George Kurtz. He'll be alongside Corey Parsons from 12 to 2. And then from 2 to 4 is going to be the Tout Wars with Laura Michaels and Justin Mason. Before we get to the closer report, I would like to tell you once again about DKMS. What you can do at over at dailyroto.com/DKMS, because if you want a chance to win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game, you go over to dailyroto.com/DKMS, because there you can find a link to free DFS baseball contests every single day. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. While 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, which is nearly 14,000 people each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. So find out how you can help and play in free DFS contests with a shot at winning two tickets to a 2018 World Series game, World Series, and saving lives. What is better than that combination? So you go over to dailyroto.com/DKMS and have a chance to win and save a life. Now, George, let's head over to this closer report, because I was reading the one that you did release. I believe it was on Tuesday, right? I think it was the Tuesday, the 5th, you had released it. And there were three things that really, really jumped out to me. It's jam-packed with info. But there were three storylines that I was following that I found absolutely it really grabbed my attention. The first was the Baltimore Orioles. And you were just kind of talking about Zach Britton, and he's going to be coming off of the disabled list soon, right? The expectation is in mid-June, and we are getting closer, right? Obviously, today being the 10th, so we are closing in around that time. Whether he gets the closer role or not immediately is up for discussion. But you mentioned what is, I think, an absolute key point here is, does it matter if Zach Britton is on a different team come July or August?
That's going to be the problem of fantasy owners. All right. Now, listen, you never can trust what Pete Angelos is going to do. That's why I don't know if Manny Machado gets traded, because I don't trust Angels to do the right thing. And the right thing is obviously to trade Machado. He's not coming back to Baltimore next year. You're not going to pay him $400 million or whatever it's going to take to resign the guy. And that's not even a joke, by the way, $400 million. It might take it that much. So you got to trade him now. Baltimore's going nowhere this year. You're trading out for everything you can get. I'm not so sure they'll do this, even with Britton. The whole goal for Britton, who should be back probably midweek, no, certainly no later than the weekend next week, the whole goal should be getting him ready to be traded. I think he will. He may not close immediately. Maybe he's got a, you know, Buck Showalter's going to make him do an outing, maybe two, an appearance, make sure he's up to the task, and then he's the closer for a month, 4 or 5 weeks. Then he's going to get dealt. I expect him to get dealt. Now, odds are he's going to get dealt to a contending team. You know, you do the math. You look around the majors. All these contending teams, which ones have a problem with closer? Yankees don't. Boston doesn't. Cleveland doesn't. You know, Houston, okay. Now, that could, they could make some noise there. If you're rooting for him to go to Houston, absolutely. Los Angeles, okay. The Angels, that is. So you got two teams there. Seattle, no. Washington, probably not. You know, Cubs, no. Milwaukee, no. Dodgers, no. Arizona doesn't have a problem there. So you, unless he gets traded to one of those two teams I just mentioned, the Angels or the Astros, he's going to be a setup man. That's what he's going to be. Hard throwing left. Every team will want him. You know, the Yankees would love to. They'll never trade him to the Yankees, but the Yankees would love to have that hard throwing left-hander. You know, but he'll be a setup man. It means, guess what? Unless you're going to have one of those leagues that has saves and holds as one category, you just lost your saves. And odds are you're going to lose your saves. Although I do expect the Angels to be in play here because they really could use a closer here. So other than that, you know, whoever's going to pay the highest price and they're going to get a top setup man. And that's the way baseball's going nowadays, where you want those guys who can lock up the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings because your starters are only supposed to go 5-plus innings, two times through the lineup, then you really want to get rid of them. You know, 5-plus innings, 6 at most. You see very few guys go really 7, 8 innings anymore. The game has changed. So he's going to get dealt, and you may be happy if you're a Brit owner, you held on to him all year. Hey, I got a Mac. You may get him for a whole month.
You mentioned the Angels in the closer report as well, right? You said Blake Parker looks like he is going to be their closer for now, because the problem is trusting Mike Socha to keep him within that role. So could perhaps a situation of, if they are aggressive, if they grab Britton, and right now, listen, Britton's not going anywhere until we see what he looks like coming off of his stint on the DL. That is going to be the most important thing, because we know the Orioles are going to sell. They're about to trade MVP caliber player and a franchise cornerstone in Manny Machado because they just got no chance in keeping him. So we know that they're going to be selling, and Zach Britton will be sold too. They're going to do whatever they can to maximize that value. So we have to see what he looks like coming off the DL. But if he goes to the Angels, could he then kind of be a guy that you know is talented enough to kind of buck the trend and have Socha rely on him moving forward for the remainder of the year?
Well, that's the problem. Trusting Mike Socha is crazy because you it may not be trusting Socha. It may not be his fault. You know, he hasn't had great relievers. Bedrosian has failed in the role a couple of times, although he's never been given a long shot at it. It's always a couple of appearances. Oh, you didn't do well, you're gone. You know, they never gave it to him for a month to see what would happen here. He did seem to trust Middleton, then Middleton got hurt. Justin Anderson, the hot rookie, came up, and he did struggle some. But once again, small sample size, didn't give him a chance here. Blake Parker came into the season as the closer. I think Socha was justified in removing him. He struggled badly. Had to get him out of there. Now he's got the job back. Assuming. And once again, we have to assume when Britton comes back, he pitches well. I mean, right? That's the first thing. And I think he will because he looks good. And he looks good in the minors. You know, in his rehab, he looks fine. I think if he goes to the Angels, yeah, I think he got himself a closer. You know, he goes to the Astros. That could be a little different thing because Giles has certainly struggled. I think he would replace Giles. But, you know, you got Davinsky, you got Peacock. But still, I think he would even be the closer there. But maybe not, yeah, always closing, you know, because you know, they may go a little mixed match here. If it's three right-handers to open the ninth inning, well, then you can go back to Giles. A bunch of left-handers, you go to Britton. It would be Britton more often than not, I believe, if it's the Astros. But once again, it just may be a situation where, you know, he wouldn't get every save chance. The Astros make some sense for him because they need a closer. We all know how much Giles has struggled. They don't need starting rotation help, right? They really don't need offense. So really, it's the bullpen they should be looking at, and it's a closer in general they should be looking at. But maybe Britton's price is too high. You know, maybe Baltimore wants too much. You know, Kelvin Herrera from KC's out there too. You know, he's pretty good in his own right, and I don't think he'll cost as much as Britton.
Yeah, so let's go over to the second thing that that really stood out to me is the situation with the San Francisco Giants. And again, I think he kind of maneuvered this perfectly, right? Where Melanson, he came off, looked wonderful in the debut, struck out the side. But Hunter Strickland has done nothing to warrant him losing the job. The problem is Mark Melanson is being paid $15 million. And if he shows capability, I personally don't even know if Hunter Strickland's performance matters at all. I just feel as if Melanson is good enough, that gets him the job. Or do you think that Strickland can perform to a level enough to hold off Melanson no matter what?
Listen, we all know what happens in sports. Generally, if you're making the money, you're gonna get a chance to fail. You're just going to get that chance to fail. And Melanson failed last year, but that's last year. He has not failed this year. He's been hurt all year, just came back. You know, I completely agree. I think that's because I wrote it. That Strickland's done nothing. Nothing. Generally, I do agree with what I write. I'm not using a ghostwriter. That Strickland has done nothing to lose the job. He deserves to keep the job. You know, he truly does. He pitched very well. But Melanson's making $15.5 million a year. You know, you can't trade him, by the way. Anybody's thinking that. You're in the hunt. You're only 2.5 games back of the lead the National League West, which is a shock to me, by the way. And, you know, you're getting healthy. You got Melanson back now. Madison Bumgarner came back now. I think he's going to get put in there. He's had three appearances, at least yesterday. I don't think he pitched yesterday. So he had three appearances yesterday, only giving up one run, and he gave that up Friday night. I think it's coming soon. Fantasy-wise, though, I'd be worried. Because I think if he struggles somewhat, he's not going to have a long time to figure it out. Because, as I said, this is not a team that's 10 games out and not playing for anything. You know, they are 2.5 games out. You know, they're 500 team, 32 and 32. If Melanson's not figuring it out, I think they would go back to Strickland rather quickly if it's a couple of blown saves here. But I think they're going to give him a chance again. That's the bottom line. If you own Melanson and Strickland, or even if you just own Strickland, if and when this happens, let's say for argument's sake, on Wednesday it's announced that Melanson's going back in as the closer. I would not drop Strickland, not unless you desperately need that roster spot. I'd want to keep him just in case, keep him for a couple of weeks just in case Melanson does struggle here. I think it's important to do. And listen, if you don't have any problem with saves where it doesn't matter, you know, then fine. You know, you can let him go here. But then again, would you want to give saves to somebody else in your league? But if you don't need the roster spot, I'd want to hold on to Strickland just in case. And let's not forget, Strickland still. You know, it's not like you can never use Strickland. He can protect your ratios. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm assuming you're not in a Holds league, but he can protect your ratios. He still may be better than a fourth or fifth Major League Baseball starter who's getting wrecked every time he goes out there and killing your ratios, but giving you more strikeouts and a better chance at wins. It comes down to what's more important to you, protecting the ratios or the counting categories.
And let me ask you then two questions on Melanson. One, I'm pretty sure I know the answer. The other one maybe is a little more complicated. If Melanson is still available in your league, he needs to be owned right now.
Agreed. Every save is valuable, and I do think he gets the chance. So, I'm not breaking the bank for him. Mm-hmm. You know, you got Fab tonight. I'm not going to spend, half my Fab. I will put in a bid, assuming I need saves. You know, and I might even put a bid to keep people honest, make sure they don't get him for, a $2.
Right.
You know, just to make sure of that. Because what's the worst thing that could happen? If, let's say you put in $4 bid, and you want him, and you didn't expect to. You know, and you didn't lose anybody you care about. Well, it's trade bait.
That's
right?
True.
As soon as he gets named that closer, trade bait. You know, maybe you can get something for him. As I said, saves are always valuable. Every save is important.
Second question then. If you have to choose between right now, today, you're going, you look at your roster, and if you're going to add Melanson, the guy you have to drop is Strickland. If you're making that decision today, do you drop Strickland for Melanson?
That is I'm actually thinking about that is a much tougher question. Mm-hmm. If I own Strickland and I'm banking on the rest of the year, I'm still going to go for Melanson, but this is a problem. It wouldn't be for a lot of money because I just don't know if either one is going to be the close for the rest of the season here. But I'm going to go with Melanson. You have to believe he gets another shot. And he may not fail. You know, banking on him failing is risky in itself. If you stick with Strickland, not only you're banking that he stays the closer, but you're banking on that Melanson doesn't get the chance. And he does, and if he does or he fails, that's two chances you're taking here. That's it. And generally, players who make the most money, and by far, this is what Melanson was signed to do last year, to be the closer. he's going to get a chance. I would feel differently, Kevin, if he had failed this year. Mm-hmm. You know, if he had pitched in April and lost a job before he got hurt. He got hurt at the beginning of the year. You know, so he's never failed this year. Yes, he struggled last year. But that's, I don't think Bochy cares about that. He cares about this year. You know, I think it's unfortunate for Strickland owners. But then again, you sort of knew this at the beginning of the year when you claimed Strickland. Yeah, after Melanson was put on the DL. You knew eventually you were going to have to come to this decision. The problem is Strickland pitched so well, you're like, damn, he doesn't deserve to lose the job. And he doesn't. But still, I think he will. But it's not an easy call. And I'll say it again. I would not break the bank on Melanson. I don't think it's worth it to do that. I would put in a representative bid depending on how badly you need the saves or how badly you want to cover yourself. You know, that's it. I would not, you know, in most leagues, and every league is different when it comes to bidding, which is why answering bidding questions is always the hardest thing I do because I don't know your league. You know, I don't know how aggressive your owners are. I don't know how many other teams in your league need a closer. Right. But generally, for the most part, I'm probably looking at 10 to 12% of my budget.
I think that is fair. The third thing that I definitely want to get to here, and probably my favorite thing that was in this week's closer report, was something that took place in Atlanta involving the New York Mets, where Jeurys Familia, who is the team's closer, was brought into the eighth inning. The reason being, the Braves had the heart of the order coming up, right? So they had 3, 4, 5, and as you mentioned, if the objective of the closer is to save the game, you're saving it by going up against the heart of the order, not their 6, 7, 8, or right, 7, 8, 9. So that is what is important. And Mickey Callaway, as we know, comes over from the Indians, where I feel like this kind of stuff was almost trademarked by them with what they were doing with Andrew Miller. They'd throw him in the 9th, they'd throw him in the 5th, they'd throw him in the 6th, they'd throw him in the 3rd. Whatever it was most important, that's when Andrew Miller went into the game. We kind of have a situation here where that's what they decided to do with Jeurys Familia. And as you mentioned, this is not something that you would anticipate being a trend because players are paid for saves. I'm just reading your words here. Players are paid for saves, and managers tend to make their decision based on the save rule rather than what is best for the team, which I think is an excellent point. But is this something that you could envision? Because it's less about, it is impossible to predict, right? George, as to when will teams employ this strategy, right? Like, it has to be the perfect scenario where there's a save opportunity. 8th inning, 3, 4, 5's coming up. They'll do that, and then they'll go to someone else in the 9th. So not necessarily. How many more times will we see this for Familia? That's impossible to predict. Do you think that this becomes something that is there becomes more forward-thinking managers taking up spots in the game? This becomes more commonplace than it is currently.
See, I don't think it's forward-thinking. I think this has been around forever. I think the problem is this. For now, for most teams, your closer is your best reliever, probably 90% of teams. There are a couple teams that's not. You know, Philadelphia, Sir Anthony Dominguez is their best reliever, but he's not the closer. You can make an argument with Josh Hader in Milwaukee and a couple other teams. But for the most teams, your best reliever is the closer, and they pigeonhole him to the 9th inning. Now, if you want to win a baseball game, sometimes the most important inning is the 6th or the 7th. That's where the game's on the line. You got 1st and 2nd, 1 out, and you know, the 2, 3, 4 batters are coming up. In the 9th inning, you could have a 3-run lead. The 7th, 8th, and 9th inning is coming up. You're going to get a save. It sounds great, but the game is never in doubt. The game's in doubt in the 7th inning, and that's where you'd want to have your best reliever. The problem is you're going to get two arguments here. One, the agent and the player will have a heart attack because they're getting paid for saves. They're not getting paid for holds. You're getting paid for saves. So you're automatically not doing what's best for your team. You know, the best pitcher should come in, the best reliever should come in when the game's on the line. You know, this has changed over the past 25, 30 years. This is what Rich Gossage, the goose for the Yankees, always complains about. You know, back in my day, we pitched 2-plus innings to get to close out the game. Yeah, it's changed, Goose. All right? You're absolutely right, but, you know, get off my lawn and all that. It's changed. You know, and the other problem is you're going to hear, well, it could lead to injuries because now the pitcher doesn't know when to warm up, when to stretch, when to do his thing, when he's going to come into the game. If he's pitching in the 9th inning, he knows to start doing that and whatever, however long he has to go. All right, I get that in a way. I do understand. But still, you paid a gazillion dollars to win the game here. The Mets were interesting. I don't think this would ever work with an established closer. You know, an all-star, Craig Kimball, Aroldis Chapman, they're pitching the 9th inning. But for teams that don't have an established one, where you don't have a pecking order, where you're not really going to hear from the agent because there's nobody great, I think it could work. I do. But, you know, I thought the Mets would do that now that Familia's on the DL. I thought they would definitely do it, at least with Gesellman. Yeah, Gesellman pitched the 7th inning yesterday, started out in it. It was the bottom of the Yankees order in a tie game. So I don't know why, assuming Gesellman was the closer, I don't know why you'd want you to bring your best reliever in that situation. that caught me off guard. So I don't know what to think about the Mets anymore.
That is the all-important. I don't know what to think about the Mets anymore. There's actually some news surrounding the Mets that we will touch as we come back for the final segment here on Fantasy Sports Today. Kevin Walsh from George Kurtz. Keep it locked.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Here on Fantasy Sports Today, Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz closing out the show. It's been a really good show today, George. And a lot of stuff. I feel like we could use a whole another hour. Before I get to the Mets stuff and the story that I did mention that kind of came out this morning, because there's a whole long Mets conversation. There are some key injuries that I wanted to quickly talk to you about. We saw Clayton Kershaw head to the DL and Chris Archer as well. Two of the bigger name pitchers suffering from injury. I went in length with Lewitt last week, just kind of talking about Kershaw. What do you do if you were a fantasy owner? Here is the strategy that I offered up to listeners, and I'll get your opinion on it. I feel as if it'd be a good idea if you have Kershaw and if you're struggling, because you probably are. He was your first round pick if you have Clayton Kershaw, and that could really, really hurt you to kind of be dealing with what's going on. What I said to do is contact whoever the best team in your league is, right? Odds are that guy's got a really strong roster, and he will look at Clayton Kershaw if you offer up to him as someone that he can kind of survive with on his bench. He can give up assets for it, and where Kershaw comes back, he's going to say to himself, okay, now I'm going to have baseball's best pitcher. Once you do that, he gives you the offer for Kershaw. You then turn to the remainder of the league and say, I'm about to trade Clayton Kershaw. The best team in the league, who wants him? Because we're in a situation now where if you trade Kershaw, the idea would be you're probably going to get, what, 40 cents on the dollar. But I think that if you can maybe let the best team in the league feel like they're giving you, drive it up to 50 cents, and then you turn to everybody else who's going to be horrified of the team's best the league's best team getting Kershaw, then maybe you can get 60 cents, maybe 70 cents on the dollar. It's still going to be a net loss. But that was the strategy that I offered. What do you think?
It's funny. I would actually look at it the other way. Mm. And if I was the first place team, I'd be the one contacting the Kershaw owner.
Okay.
Because I'd want to make the, you know, I'd want the player. I'd want the great player because I don't think I had to pay the price. You know, even if I was the first place owner, I had to pay 60 cents on a dollar, I'm probably doing it. Mm-hmm. I'm first place. Now, all the reports are good. You know, it looks like he will be back somewhere around the All-Star break. So you get him for the second half of the season, and now you only have to pay 60 cents on the dollar. You know, I think I would take the chance there that I could get a great player for cheap. You know, so that's the way I would look at it. One thing I'll say, first off, any player is tradable. I hate when people say, he's not tradable. Sure he is. Everyone's tradable. It just depends on the right deal. I'm not saying you should trade the player, but anyone is tradable. Okay, two, when you're going to trade a star, which I think you actually were going this direction, a Kershaw, a Trout, anybody like that, a big name player, everybody in your league needs to know.
Yep.
Because the last thing you want to hear is, oh, wow, man, if I would have known you were trading Trout, Kevin, I would have offered you much more than what you got. I didn't know. That's the last thing you want to hear, man. Because even the guy's just lying to get on, to, you know, to bother you, which, listen, I've done a couple of times. You know, make somebody feel bad. Just, you know, I enjoy that. I'm a scumbag. So, once again, you don't want to hear that, man. You don't. The first thing you want to hear is that, especially if you think it's true. Oh, I've gotten so much more if he would have known. It's really only the great players. You don't need to do this about, you know, your corner infielder, but your great players, you want everybody to know. You know, and you know, you can't be afraid to make the deal. You really can't be afraid to make the deal. You know, Kershaw, I don't mind taking a chance on him that he comes back for the second half of the season, and he's that kind of player. If you try to trade him straight up, it's going to be difficult right now. You're going to have to really work it. Because I think right now the best you're going to do is 50 to 60 cents on the dollar. You really need to get a market out there for him. So you're going to need to work, in your scenario, work that first place person or even the second place team. You know, work that. Hey, listen, I'll sell it to you. He's going to cheap. I don't want full price. I need players I can use now. I'm struggling now. I can't wait the month. I'll be further behind. He won't help me. What can you offer me now? You know, you can even lie. Hey, Kevin, you're in second place. I'll offer you Kershaw. First place guy offered me this. You know, and if I give him Kershaw, he's going to win. You're not going to win. You know, Scott's going to win. So, Kev, you know, let's make a deal here. I'm not asking for full price here. Just beat his offer. You know, try it. No one says you got to tell the truth to fans. You know, there's no lie detector test here. You know, still, you may not get full price. You may not get, you know, 100 cents on a dollar. But all you got to do is have him beat the made-up offer you made. And you'll feel you won. So there are many different ways to go about this.
Can I quickly? That is so important. Just think about it. Just turn it into real baseball, right? If the Dodgers called the Orioles, they said, this is what we'll give you for Manny Machado. The Orioles are not going to say, oh, that sounds fair. Okay, deal. No. You now call all of the other teams, say, hey, get rid of Manny Machado. This is what we're going to be getting. Do you want to top it? Like, just do your due diligence. Like, don't be lazy, and especially if you're trading a star player. Right, and if the guy who is going to say, oh, I'll give you this for Clayton Kershaw, accept it now or I'm pulling the deal. What are we doing here? This isn't art of the deal. Tell him to screw off then and see what else you can get. I mentioned also Chris Archer here, who could really be in for a lengthy absence, is what it's saying. He's got the left abdominal strain. So this could be a tough one. To me, the thing that I kind of feel about with this whole situation is I was hoping maybe this is the year that Tampa would get Chris Archer to a contending team. I mean, they're 14.5 back of the Yankees. They're 10.5 back of the second place wild card team. Like, this is going to be another lost year for Tampa. But if he is hurt and, you know, when the trade deadline approaches, just going to be another lost year for Chris Archer.
I agree. You know, I talked about this yesterday with Joe Galina. I'm right there with you. Now, Tampa's sort of been screwed this season. I mean, you lose Brett Honeywell and you lose Jose De Leon for the season, before the season even started. Right now, Jacob Farrie is out till August. You've been snake bit. You lost Chris Archer. Granted, it's a minor injury. But still, you lost Chris Archer. You never had a chance this year. You know, I don't mind you waiting, you know, hoping you can contend. But generally, the longer you wait, the less you're going to get. Archer, you know, people think he's young. He's 29. You know, he's going to start to decline a bit. He'll be 30 in a couple of months. Think about that. He's 30 years old in September. So I think Tampa Bay absolutely wants to move him by the deadline. I think it's half the reason why they put him on the deal. Make sure he's healthy. He'll get what, 6 to 8 more starts for a trade deadline. Let's see what we can offer. You know, he's not going to the Yankees, by the way, Yankee fans. Tampa Bay won't trade it to him. At least it's highly unlikely. And DeGrom's not going to the Yankees either, by the way. Anybody who believes this is a chance, you're smoking the good stuff, man. Never going to happen. The Mets would never. It's stupid, mind you. You should take the best deal, but the Mets would, last thing they want to see is DeGrom celebrating at Yankee Stadium. Not going to happen. But as for Archer, they should move him. There's no doubt they should move him. All right, because once again, his numbers are so the last couple of years. You know, his ERA is over 4, whips around 1.3. Those aren't outworldly numbers. But I think he's only going to get worse, not better. He's slight of build. I mean, my God, this guy is, you know, he looks like 150 pounds soaking wet. You know, and those kind of pitchers, you know, the guys who aren't built like a Justin Verlander or a Roger Clemens, aren't going to pitch until their late 30s. You know, their shelf life is going to be shorter because they're smaller in stature. You know, look at Pedro Martinez, same guy who flamed out eventually because, you know, human body's not meant to throw overhand. It's going to break down here. So if I'm Tampa Bay, as soon as he proves himself healthy, you know, if he does come back like this week, give him a couple starts, his name has to go on the trade market. He may end up being the number one pitcher out there if the Mets don't market DeGrom and or Syndergaard. And I don't think the Mets should market Syndergaard, but DeGrom, they probably should. He's in the same boat, 30 years old. You know, let's see what's out there for him. But they should market Archer and market him heavily because he would be highly sought after. And, you know, but let's face it, even if you keep Archer, when are the Tampa Bay Rays going to be contending again? 2 years? 3 years? He'll be 33. Done. Get what you can get. Get all the young players you can for him now. I'm not saying you have to move. If you don't get the deal you like, fine, keep him. But you'll get a deal you like, and it can help you do with the rebuild.
I had no idea Chris Archer was. No idea. I thought he was. I thought he was maybe like 25, 26. That's actually, that is very surprising. Let me then ask you about one other guy, Shohei Ohtani. It's the DL. He has a UCL sprain. And the reports are perhaps Tommy John surgery is in the future. And as a Yankee fan, I just can't help myself but think back to Masahiro Tanaka, who came over, looked real good. And even now today, this has been going on since he first came over to Major League Baseball. There's talks about, will he need Tommy John surgery? And it's weird. I wonder if we could see a situation now where players coming over from Japan could get a stigma around them that they are destined to get hurt once they hit the big leagues. I don't know if that is true. I don't know if it is justified. But what happened with Tanaka, and if now we have Ohtani needing Tommy John surgery as well, I do think that that could be an outcome. So what do you think of that? And also, considering what we've seen from Tanaka, is Ohtani just better off getting the TJ surgery?
I think a lot goes into it here. From what we heard, the Angels knew about this. That, all pitchers have tears. It's just a matter of what degree of tear. So they knew about this. That could be just a matter of time. Probably while they tried to manage his workload. They went to the six-man rotation, pretty much pitching once a week. They skipped a couple of starts here and there. So I don't think any of this is truly surprising for the Angels. And I don't think it matters to the Angels. And when I say about that, yes, losing the player, it matters. But I think they very well knew this is probably a ticking time bomb here. And I don't think it bothers them, other than lose the player for this year when you're contending, if he has to undergo TJ surgery, because it didn't cost them an arm and a leg to acquire him. This wasn't like with the Yankees, where they had to pay $160 million or whatever it is for Tanaka and a posting fee. It didn't cost them that for Ohtani. So I think they're okay. Even worst case scenario, we'll let him do the platelet injection. He's out a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, he'll pitch. He needs Tommy John surgery in August. Whether he needs it in August, now, or October, the timeline's the same. He's out this year and next year. He'll be back with 2020. So they have room here to figure it out, to hope that the platelet injection surgery works, that he will be able to come back this year. I think their biggest concern is going to be this. What if you want his bat in the lineup? Do you delay the surgery for that reason? So he can hit for you? Maybe he can't pitch the rest of the year, but he can hit. What if that comes to being, which means you would have to delay the surgery to, let's say, October, and you think about it, that still gives him 16 months before spring training would start in 2020, which should be enough to heal. So this is why they have a lot of options here. It's not doom and gloom for the Angels, even if he needs TJ surgery. The problem is, do you want to give him that extra couple of months to rehab? If assuming he does, and it's a big assumption, we don't know. But assuming he does, and obviously it'll be after the 3 weeks here in a month, probably around August. Do you want to give him the extra 2 months to have that surgery, or do you want his bat in the lineup? That's what I'm wondering to see here. If it's all doom and gloom, he does need the TJ surgery. It may end up being the platelet thing works, just like it did with Tanaka. But let's not forget, with Tanaka, yes, it worked. He didn't need the surgery. He's also lost 3 to 5 miles an hour off his fastball. Right? He doesn't throw as hard anymore.
Yeah. I just thought about this as well, because the report did say, right, that the Angels kind of knew about this, I think even in December. Remember how people were kind of interested in the fact that Ohtani decided to come over now, when I think it was if he waited a year or two, he would have then been able to sign like a $20+ million contract, if I'm not mistaken. That's right, right?
That is right. I know exactly where you're going with this.
Maybe he had to come over now because you get Tommy John surgery over in Japan, come back rusty, then maybe that big league deal's never there.
Once again, it's a great conspiracy theory. Once again, to talk about, I think it does. I honestly never thought about it. He just started saying it, then I could see where you were going. It does make some sense that he knew it was just a matter of time, and he wanted to get here and establish himself, and then get the surgery. Maybe. It's all intriguing. Like I said, as a baseball fan, I hope he's okay. I hope it's just the 3 weeks. I know, I'm a Yankee fan. You think, oh, you're great. That's good for the Yankees because they might have a good chance to get to play the Angels in the wild card game if they finish the wild card. And, you don't want to face Ohtani. But, man, I want the best players to play. I enjoy the game. So I hope he's okay. But I think this is much more intriguing than people realize because there's so many parameters to it. Like I said, he could just be a hitter then, and not a pitcher. He's a DH, so he doesn't have to throw anyway. You know, it's not like he's playing right field and he's got away by throwing the ball with the TJ. It's not the case. He can still hit. They could delay the surgery, and it probably, there's always a chance that he has, you know, some kind of complication. Now, it does cost him parts of 2020 because they waited. You know, if they were out of contention, this would be pretty easy. If he needed the surgery, just get surgery. But they're in contention. You know, so I think there are a lot of layers to this. It should be an intriguing situation to watch. But once again, I do hope it works out well for him.
So then let's close here. We mentioned the New York Mets, and the report has come out that there is a chance that the Mets are going to demote Michael Conforto to the minors. So far in the month of June, he is batting 2-for-25, which is good enough for a .080 average. For the month of June, they have the third worst record, or I think there's only three lesser teams than them, rather. It's one of the two in the National League. They have the worst record in baseball since May 1st. It is a mess in Queens, George. I agree with you that Noah Syndergaard shouldn't be on the move. I agree with you that the idea of DeGrom going to the Yankees is incredibly unlikely because those teams will never trade with one another, but is it time for the Mets to fully embrace a sell-off and move DeGrom, move Asdrubal Cabrera, see what they could get for Yoenis Cespedes and Jay Bruce? Because I'll tell you right now, looking at it, I think it is time.
Once again, it's the same as in the fantasy league. Nothing changes here. You absolutely have to see what's out there for DeGrom. I said he's 30 years old, not a kid. You know, his free agency is 2.5 years away, so that's great. But it also means his value it will skyrocket, if the Mets wanted to deal him. No, he's not going to be dealt to the Yankees, which is, once again, it's stupid. Because you shouldn't care where he goes as long as you get the best package. Right. And the Yankees have the best package, and the Yankees would want him. But they're not going to deal him to the Yankees because they're afraid of too many other things. Probably not going to deal him to Boston either, or the Washington Nationals. You know, so, but you should see what's out there. You should absolutely see what's out there. I mean, the Yankees and Mets couldn't get together on Lucas Duda last year. Yeah. You know, Jay Bruce and Neil Walker as well, for that matter. So there's no chance the DeGrom's going. But, yeah, you need to see what's out there for him, because you might get a package like, oh, my God. And I think you would, because you could probably justify two top prospects, major league ready prospects, by the way, and then at least two other prospects. I'm not saying top prospects, but two other ones that are good, maybe lower level minors. And that could restart your organization in a big hurry. You know, you're talking from the Yankees alone, you could probably demand Andujar, maybe, I don't think you're getting Torres, but Andujar, Frazier, you know, maybe Justice Sheffield, and one other guy. That's pretty good haul there. Just to start, the talks. You know, so you're talking, that's what they're looking at from any organization they decide to deal with. So, yes, no one's saying you have to. You know, I would, if I'm the Mets, I would go to Jacob DeGrom. Listen, you're going to hear your name out there. Most of the reports are probably false. But some will be true. We'll let you know. Just like the Tigers did with Verlander last year. We'll let you know what's true and what's not. And we'll come to you before the deal is finalized. But we are going to put your name out there. It'd be, you know, you could snow job it too. It'd be good for you. You know, go to the contending team, blah, 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 blah. You know, but I think the Mets would be, I think it's mismanagement not to put his name out there. No one's saying because you put your name out there, he has to be traded. But you need to see what the value is for him and what you could get back.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Also, I wanted to mention Paul Goldschmidt owners smiling today. He went for two games in a row where he had two homers in each game. He's also had three or more hits in four straight games. So that's finally coming through to you. We came through you today. Thank you so much for stopping by. You're going to get more George Kurtz on the next show with Corey Parsons on Fantasy Football Frenzy. Thank you, George. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, everybody, for stopping by. See you next weekend.